You're listening to highlights from One Planet Podcast's interview with Michel Forst, UN Special Rapporteur on Environmental Defenders. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
Maybe I should start by explaining what I'm doing and why I have decided to focus on those who are using new forms of mobilization like civil disobedience to raise awareness with governments on the lack of action, the lack of responses to commitment made on the Paris Agreement. In fact, I've been appointed in 22 with this new mandate, which has been created to protect what we call the UN environmental defenders, which is a very broad category of people who are simply trying to protect the planet, in fact, using non-violence forms of mobilization. And starting with this new mandate, because I had already one before, I decided to firstly consult with environmental defenders. So I started to travel inside Europe. I visited 23, 24 countries in Europe, mostly EU countries, with a view to meet with governments to explain this new mandate and to explain what were my expectations on more input coming from government to protect those who are at risk, in fact. And I also used the time spent in the capitals to invite environmental defenders to come with me, to meet with me. I wanted to hear their voice. I wanted to hear testimonies. I wanted to hear from them their expectations with this new mandate, which has been created to protect them, in fact. And was impressed by the fact that the first that came to me in Paris, in Berlin, in Madrid, Portugal, in Denmark, elsewhere, were young people precisely using civil disobedience as means of action, trying to raise awareness, and then facing different forms of repression. So I, after having heard so many testimonies, I decided to focus the first months of my mandate to raise awareness with UN member states on my assessment of the situation, firstly in Europe. And I presented a first position paper on the right to protest and civil disobedience and explained how I do understand civil disobedience according to human rights law standards. And really, the first assessment was very critical to governments, in fact. We see first people going through the streets using new forms of mobilization, doing dance on the floor, blocking access to airports, to roads, and in return, facing brutality by the police, mostly in countries like France, because France is well known as being one of the most violent countries in terms of police responses to demonstrations. But also in other countries, the brutality of the police was a matter of concern for many activists. They told me, for instance, that in Portugal, there was a case also in Denmark, young activists were arrested by the police, and women were asked to sweep the closest in front of male police officers, for instance, with no response from the government on the behavior of the police and the police officers. In fact, brutality by the police in many, many countries. New techniques used by police officers, like in Germany, very technical gesture, which is they call that a penguin response. They take the hand of those who are demonstrating, and that's very violent, very painful, and you see young people, also old people, crying after being maltreated by the police in Germany. And then the same being brought to court, sued for different topics, called eco-terrorists, green Talibans, green Khmers by high-level politicians, like in the UK, like in France, like in Austria, while those ministers forget who are terrorists, in fact, who are Talibans, those who are, so mixed brutally in the world, and comparing those young activists to those categories, for me, is not something which is difficult to understand. I also try to monitor what's going on in the courts, in France, in the UK, and yes, again, discovery how the UK is treating those young activists. As you know, it's well known, 5 years prison for non-violent peaceful protesters simply for organizing a Zoom call to decide whether or not they would block and get to report. That's the case of Daniel Shaw in the UK. In France, the penalties are less severe, but in the UK and other countries, that's something which is striking, in fact. So my role is very, in fact, limited. Because my mandate is really focusing on the protection of those who are trying to protect the planet, in fact. So protection of defenders, that's my main topic. And when I'm speaking to states, when I'm speaking to companies, it's always related to one case or different cases of defenders who are facing threats, attacks, penalization by other companies or by states. In the case of Paul Watson recently in Denmark. So when I do receive a complaint coming from defenders, then I'm speaking to states, I'm also speaking to companies. The rate of response is very good, in fact. If you look at the website where I publish all my communications sent to states and the response by companies, by you would see that we have a high rate of reply by companies and by states. I grew up in France, but again, if I may, traveling for instance, in Peru or in Colombia, in Honduras, meeting with indigenous people, they have this relation with nature that we don't have anymore. We have lost, in fact. When they say that the food that they eat, the water that they drink, the air that they breathe, it's not only air, food, that's something else. That's what they call the Pachamama, in fact. That Mother Earth, that Mother Nature, in fact, which is sort of cosmovision that they share in common. And traveling in many communities in the world, in Africa, but also in Asia, in Latin America, we see the same, in fact, the same relationship to nature. The Pachamama is not only for Latin America. In fact, Mother Earth, that's something which is across the globe. And all communities, indigenous people, same relation with nature that in, you know, all those countries, in fact. And we have lost that relationship with nature, in fact. And difficult to say if we could find it back. But at least when you are with them, you spend time with them, you share food with them, then you feel solidarity with them. Recently, I met with a woman who came to me with her mobile phone, and she presented me a video of her saying things that the members of her community weren't expecting her to say, in fact. And she told me, it's not me. I didn't make this video, in fact. It's a fake. And it has a disaster effect on my community. They don't trust me anymore. They don't want me as their leader because they are simply, based on this video, think that I'm an ally to the government. So fake videos, fake pictures, that's a tool that are used now by governments, by companies to fight against organizations like that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the small communities in countries are targeted by those who are using AI, that's something which is, for me, frightening. They don't have the means to defend themselves, and the members of the organizations and the community, they don't understand how it is possible to prepare a fake video. So if they don't understand, they think it's a reality, and then there's an impact on the work of the whole community or the whole NGO. Yes, when I was young, in fact, I was a great reader. I read a lot of stories and romance and novels from different writers, mostly French and French one. Then moving to Amnesty and to other organizations, I also had mentors, in fact, mostly at the UN, law professors that were for me a source of inspiration because they developed new norms, new legislations, new international standards, which was for me a source of inspiration. And I'm more a practitioner myself. My role is more to, on a daily basis, to receive complaints and to deal with complaints. But yes, I'm inspired by many of those law professors and UN officials that were for me, like models. And what I do see is that many people do not understand what the UN is doing. In fact, the UN does only what states are allowing the UN to do. But inside the UN, you have many experts that have good solutions, making plans for the planet, but are not really heard by government, by those who are deciding. And sometimes you have also places in which you would find allies. And then you also to fight battles, bad countries that don't want those positive guidance to happen, to take place. I spend, in Latin America, a lot of time with them in communities, spending hours to discuss with them, simply to see how they behave and their relationship with nature, which was, as I explained, to a source of inspiration for me. And as I said, that's something which I saw in other countries, not only in America. I remember one of my official missions was to Australia, invited by the government of Australia to do an assessment of the situation of defenders in Australia. And traveling from states to states, I met with also Aboriginal people, and they told me was also what I saw in other countries, in fact. They are living in peace, non-violent, having their relationship with nature, and all of a sudden they see engines coming and trying to drill holes in the places, and they try to protest, and the state will say they have an authorization, but they have not been informed, they have not been consulted, and they don't have the proper means to protest and to denounce what's happening in countries like in Australia. And that's something that we see across the globe. And that's why some international instrument, like the Aarhus Convention, for instance, on which my mandate is built, is so important. Because these are precisely the three pillars which are so important for protecting nature. The first is access to information, which means that all states have an obligation to share information, to discuss information on any plans to invest or to build anything on a place that belongs to others. So access to information is a modality by which states have a duty to inform the population in their own language and any plans. And the second pillar, so important, is public participation, which means that after being informed, those who are affected by new industries, new installation, have the right to give their say, and even the right to say no to the government, to the company. And the last one, the third pillar, is access to justice, environment matters. When they see that their rights have been violated, then they could find justice in the countries or even international organizations. I mean, like theology, it remains in the back of my mind every day, in fact, that. It's a source of inspiration for me. And yeah, probably it gave me the values and hopes on which it was not a decision to build a career, in fact, but it was led to different organizations, to different roles by choices made, inspired by those reflections. I'm also meditating a lot, in fact, spending times in meditation, in fact, that helps me, but also it's a source of inspiration for me.
Because with this difficult work, you have to somehow go back to the source. You have to empty oneself of these concerns and then go back to the source, whether that's the humanities, the arts, or some kind of spiritual practice or meditation. I heard an interesting theological interpretation about what was the Garden of Eden. And that the Garden of Eden is when we lost our innocence, was when we lost our connection with nature.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe we are the snake in the garden.
Yeah, that's what exactly what I'm currently feeling. In fact, You know, in my role as special rapporteur, in our role, I'm of course with other rapporteurs, when we are meeting, as was playing Mother's Disappeared, or people are describing the terrible situations and attacks that they're facing. Sometimes, at the end of the day, it's very hard. You think of all testimonies, all the emotions from those people, and that at the end of the day, you face sometimes despair. So that's why you need to have a space for yourself in which you spend time to meditate on the course of the day to find inspiration and energy for the coming days.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.